As we pick up in our fourth lesson in 2 Samuel, Abner has just decided that he is going to transfer the power of the northern kingdom of Israel, the 11 tribes under Ishbosheth, over to King David. You see, Ishbosheth has insulted Abner because Abner had the gall to go into a concubine, Rizpah, who belonged to King Saul, Ishbosheth's father, strictly against the laws of relationships in Israel. But Abner was insulted when Ishbosheth asked him about it and inquired of it, and he said, I'm going to transfer the power. Abner thought he was the power behind the throne of Ishbosheth, and he thought he was the authority in the northern 11 tribes. So he sent a messenger to David, and David replies back to Abner with his demand. And the demand was this: you will not see my face unless you bring my wife to me. Now that's Michal, the first wife of David, King Saul's daughter. So one of the things that was interesting is David did not only reply to Abner to complete his demand, he also sent word to Ishbosheth the king. See, David was thwarting the attempt of the snide Abner. Ishbosheth's response to Abner being lewd with one of Saul's wives that belonged to Ishbosheth now, Ishbosheth was responsible to care for them for the rest of their life, must have triggered David's understanding that Ishbosheth and Abner were now at odds against each other. Ishbosheth's response to David also communicated to David that Ishbosheth was willing to do what was right in the eyes of the law. Michal belonged to David. Ishbosheth was ready to make that right, and he did. He took her from Palatil's home and sent her to David. Palatil, whom no doubt loved Michal, was unhappy with Ishbosheth's actions. He wept and followed as they took her away. But one of the things we noticed in the scripture we read last week, that Abner was there. It was Abner, not Ishbosheth, who told Palatil to turn around and go home. All but in this passage, we see that Ishbosheth may not have been there to help repossess Michal. But no doubt, he had ordered Abner to do this deed. Perhaps Abner volunteered to repossess Michal after trying to make a covenant with David. It only makes sense. Abner has a plan to undermine Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth could have stopped Abner because of his previous threat, but he couldn't stop him because he was afraid of Abner. He was afraid. Ishbosheth had already threatened to turn the kingdom over to David, but no less, Ishbosheth may not have known that Abner's attempt to complete the deal had already started and was already in motion. Ishbosheth may have received the request from David and simply thought, hey, let's make this wrong thing right, and not knowing that Abner had already tried to make a covenant with David. Abner saw Ishbosheth's desire to return Michal as an opportunity to advance his own agenda. And with Michal returning to David, Gad tells us that Abner's authority and plan to make David king, at least what he had in his mind, okay? Verse number 17. Now Abner had consultation with the elders of Israel, saying, in times past you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines, and from the hand of all their enemies. Now Abner moved to complete his plan to remove Ishbosheth and transfer all the northern 12 tribes to David by being a snide and undermining the control of Ishbosheth by going to these elders in all the 11 tribes without the knowledge of Ishbosheth. It was true about David that he too was supposed to be the king and to defeat all the enemies, and especially the Philistines. And all the tribes knew that David was supposed to be king. Yet the one who derailed the Lord's plan by putting Ishbosheth as king from the very beginning, by putting Ishbosheth on the throne, is now trying to undo what he did, not because he thinks it's correct, because he's been insulted and he is in trouble with Ishbosheth for being lewd with Saul's concubine Rizpah. We now know that Ishbosheth was afraid of Abner. The scripture told us that in the chapter. But if Ishbosheth was afraid of Abner, Abner may also have been afraid of Ishbosheth also. Now, brazenly, Abner sets forth the meeting with King David, verse number 19, chapter 3, verse number 19. Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin, and in addition, Abner went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and to the whole house of Benjamin. Then Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, "Let me arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord, the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may be king over all that your soul desires." So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Abner was in outright mutiny against Ishbosheth. He was planning a rebellion against Ishbosheth. We do not know if Ishbosheth even had any knowledge of what Abner was doing. But with Abner helping return David's wife to him, Abner had successfully helped Ishbosheth. And Ishbosheth may have thought Abner had abandoned the threat to turn the kingdom over, but he had not. David welcomed Abner with a usual feast, and he listened to Abner's plan. But notice David did not agree to Abner's plan. David's character would not have allowed him to join Abner's plan. David held to one principle in life: touch not the anointed. We heard it repeatedly in the book of 1 Samuel concerning King Saul, and David would not touch Saul, and he was certainly not going to touch Ishbosheth. Therefore, he would have not entered into a plan with Abner in any way to take the kingdom away from Abner. Instead, he sent Abner away. Well, Gad tells us of the deception to make David king, and it comes here in verse number 22 of chapter 3. "And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him arrived, they told Joab, saying, 'Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has sent him away, and he has gone in peace.' Then Joab came to the king and said, 'What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away? And why is he always already gone? You know Abner the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you, learn of your going out and coming in, and find out all that you are doing.'" Now, Joab did not trust any of the doings of Abner, and rightly so. Joab did not understand why David entertained Abner in the first place. Joab was probably right. Snides are like leopards. They cannot change their spots. Jeremiah 13:23. Neither can someone accustomed to doing evil do good. They just like to do evil. Abner was accustomed to doing evil, and that characteristic of him has been plainly presented in the scripture. Joab's intuition was correct. Abner had planned on coming to David's side and continuing to do as he wished, just like he did with Ishbosheth. We must remember that Saul had not yet been dead 2 years, and Abner had already presumed his own authority over all of Saul's possessions. So by helping David become the king of all Israel, Abner evidently assumes that he is the power behind David's kingdom also. But David was a man different in character than Abner and Joab. David was willing to meet with anyone. However, it did not mean that David would agree to every proposal that came his way. Indeed, this proposal to take the kingdom away from Ishbosheth was wrong in David's mind because Ishbosheth had been anointed king by the priest, and he was also anointed because he was a family member of King Saul. David would not cross that boundary. David protected that boundary just as Ishbosheth protected the boundary of the sanctity of marriage between David and Michal. There is not much difference in some of their core beliefs between Ishbosheth and David. Abner was a loose cannon in Ishbosheth's ranks. Nevertheless, Joab was also a loose cannon in David's ranks. After speaking his mind with David, Joab left the king's presence with a plan. The plan was Abner's abduction. Verse number 26. When Joab came out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirah. But David did not know it. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the middle of the gate to speak with him privately. And there he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel his brother. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, "I and my kingdom are innocent before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it," now that's the death of Abner, "fall on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and may there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge, or who is a leper, or who takes hold of a distaff, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread." That's chapter 3, verse 29. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. Joab had a plan for Abner when he sent for Abner, but he did not share that plan with David. He knew Abner could not be far away, and he sent men to capture and bring him back to Hebron, and that's what he did. He brought them, Abner, back to David's capital, but David was not told of this action. Joab killed Abner in a retaliation for Abner killing Joab's brother. And when David hears the news of this action of Abner's murder, David curses Joab's family. "May it," now that's the death of Abner, "fall on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and may there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge, or who is a leper, or who takes hold of a distaff, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread." That's chapter 3, verse 29. When it happened, David did what David did. He wrote a song for Abner. Now, it's not going to be as long as the song that he wrote for Saul and Jonathan. But before sharing the song, we hear the instruction of David about this song in verse number 31. "Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, 'Tear your clothes and gird on sackcloth and lament before Abner.' And King David walked behind the briar. Thus they buried Abner in Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king chanted a lament for Abner and said," we pause right there. A briar is a wood frame that is used to carry a load. And when our Bibles were translated into English, it specifically had a meaning of a frame that was to use to carry a corpse to be laid in a grave. And that is from the Old English. And I want you to notice that David made Joab mourn also, as well as all the people. And no doubt Joab saw nothing to mourn about. And yet David made him mourn. He also made him walk behind the briar to the grave and to participate in the burial. David was not a friend of Abner, but he still wept because of the way of Abner's death. At the grave, the song from David was sung, be it short as it was, by the king, verse 33b. Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet put in fetters. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. And all the people wept again over him. The hands of justice had not executed Abner. Abner had died at the hands of hatred and duplicity. Abner did die as a fool dies. His days were cut short by a wicked man, Joab. He should have been arrested. He should have been bound in chains. He should have had his feet in chains in his hands and brought before a court. He was denied that privilege by a wicked man, Joab. But Abner was, in fact, a fool, as David asserts. We think of a fool as someone who makes an unwise decision, which is true. But in the scripture, everyone who is a criminal is a fool for breaking the law. Abner had done that. That is foolish. Thus, Abner was a fool for breaking the law of being unfaithful to his superior and the laws of the Lord. Nevertheless, in David's mind, he should have stood before a judge to be tried, not cut down by a policeman. After the funeral, David's pain increased. Verse number 35. Then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was still day. But David vowed, saying, "May God do so to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything else before the sun goes down." Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, just as everything the king did pleased all the people. So all the people and all of Israel understood that day that it had not been the will of the king to put Abner the son of Ner to death. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zerah, are too difficult for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his evil. Let it be known that the actions are always more important than the words." Our actions cannot dismiss evil. So too, David could not dismiss the evil actions of Joab against Abner. As you notice there, the Lord David says, he makes a vow that he's not going to eat bread that day. It's not a fast. It's just a vow he made, and he's going to keep it. Now, Abner was a prince because he was a relative of Saul and a relative of Ishbosheth. And because of that, David has always given honor to the bloodline of the anointed king Saul. And this moment in time was absolutely no different. After the burial of Abner, David continued to mourn. In the Bible, fasting intentionally means not eating food. But it also seems to always be associated with mourning and grief and sin. And in this case, the death of Abner stirred both, and David made a vow not to eat. Neither did David know what to do with Joab and his brother, who helped apprehend Abner and kill him. They were sons of his sister. And at that moment, mourning the sin of the sons of his sister was more than David could consider. He was still mourning Abner. For that, David deferred to the Lord to let him hand over the evil of those sons of his sister and let the Lord take care of them. And in this first section of the book of 2 Samuel, which we have entitled David's Throne, we have discovered the death of the kingdom of King Saul, the division of the kingdom of the northern tribes selecting Ishbosheth to be their king, and the tribe of Judah selecting David to be their king. We have discovered the development of two kingdoms that allowed Ishbosheth to decrease while David increased. We now come to the final stage of this first section, which we will call the decapitation of the kingdom. Our writer begins with a summary of Saul's descendants, the men associated with them, beginning with Ishbosheth, chapter 4, verse 1. Now when Ishbosheth, Saul's son, heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost courage and all Israel was disturbed. Ishbosheth was the sole living son of Saul after the Battle of Gilboa. Abner was Saul's first cousin, the son of his father's brother, Ner. Kish was Saul's father. Ner was the brother of Kish. Therefore, Abner was the first cousin of Ishbosheth once removed, as our genealogists today identify that type of relationship. However, the death of Abner struck Ishbosheth to the bone. He was the commander of Ishbosheth's army, and Abner's death put Ishbosheth at great risk. His death also struck deep into the hearts of the men of Ishbosheth's kingdom. As the story unfolds, Ishbosheth probably did not take Abner's threat to heart and did not know that he was undermining the kingdom of Ishbosheth's rule. Ishbosheth had two associates who were commanders and of bands within his army, Baana and Rechab, and we hear about them here in chapter 4, verse 2. Saul's son had two men who were commanders of bands. The name of one was Baana, and the name of the other Rechab, sons of Rimmon of the Berethite, sons of Rimmon the Berethite of the sons of Benjamin. Some minister along the way, as you saw, there were some lines there that I struck out. Some minister along the way inserted those words that I have struck out through because we know from all the ancient copies of 2 Samuel that we have today that these words were not included in the oldest and most reliable manuscripts. And although I have struck the words, the men of Berethite were Canaanite Hivite tribes, or was a Canaanite Hivite tribe, I should say, that lived in the tribal area of Benjamin. Joshua 9:17 tells us that. They, along with three other Canaanite villages, tricked Joshua into a covenant of safety. Therefore, they were not destroyed by Israel as instructed by the Lord. And as for the struck words, the Berothite fled to Gittim. We do not know the accuracy of that statement. However, Gittim is a town in the tribal area of Benjamin. Nehemiah 11:31-36 tells us about that. It makes sense that at some time they might have moved from their home at Beroth to live in another Benjamite town in the tribal area of Benjamin. And these two associates of Ishbosheth would betray Ishbosheth. Baana and Rechab were Canaanite Hivite brothers of Rimmon. Our writer is simply introducing them to us, so we will know them when we hear them again shortly. But the writer identifies another descendant of Saul, but not of Ishbosheth. He is the grandson of Saul through Jonathan, and his name is Mephibosheth. Verse number 4. Now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Soon we will hear David ask about any sole surviving descendants of King Saul. And that is the reason why Gad has already introduced us to this crippled child by the name of Mephibosheth. He was 5 when his father and grandfather were killed 2 years before. So 5 plus 2, because that's how long David's been king, tells us that he is now 7 years of age at this place in the storyline. The writer then gives us a summary of Ishbosheth's death here in chapter 4, verse 5. So the sons of Rimmon, the Berethite, Rechab, and Baana, departed and came to the house of Ishbosheth in the heat of the day while he was taking his midday rest. They came to the middle of the house as if to get wheat, and they struck him in the belly. And Rechab and Baana, his brothers, escaped. Now when they came into the house, As he was lying on his bed in his bedroom, they struck him and killed him and beheaded him. And they took his head and traveled by the way of the Arabah all night. Then they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron and said to the king, "Behold the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy who sought your life. Thus the Lord has given my lord, the king, vengeance this day on Saul and his descendants." Baana and Rechab went in, acted like they were going to ask for wheat, struck Ishbosheth on the bed in his belly. Then he comes back around and says, hey, when they struck him on his belly, they killed him. And then they beheaded him. And then they took his head and they left. And they went over to the Jordan River, which they were in Mahanaim. That was the capital of Ishbosheth. That's where his house was. So they had to go west to the Jordan River. They had to cross over the Jordan River, get on the Arabah, come all the way down to where they'd take the first road that they could take that would go up to Hebron. And when they got there to Hebron, they took his head into David and they handed it to David and said, here it is. And they did not understand the heart of Ishbosheth and David. They were brother-in-laws. Neither of them hated each other. They lied to David that he was your enemy. They were not each other's enemies. The Lord didn't take this vengeance on Ishbosheth for David either. This was done by these two evil men. The writer summarizes David's disdain for the actions of Baana and Rechab. Listen, we could write this. We know what David was going to do, but we're not ready for that, because that must wait until we come back together our next time in our fifth lesson.